welcome everybody.
Are you going to start the podcast now? Like, we've been waiting. Like, seriously, like, it's fine that, like, we had a nice conversation because we're all friends here, but, like, I'd really like to get the episode started at some point. So, are you going to do the intro or am I?
I think he was starting the intro.
You know what? I'll do it. Welcome to Brainstorm Brewery, everybody. I'm the main host of Brainstorm Brewery, Jason Ault. I'm joined by my sub-host, Corbin Hostler. Go ahead and say hi, Corbin. Okay.
Did he disconnect?
He might have. That silence is Corbin Hostler being unprofessional, but that's fine. We're joined by our longtime guest, Douglas Johnson. Say hello, DJ.
I will probably be an official co-host in the next few months so that we can all stop beating this dead horse.
Yeah, whatever. Just get some. Once you become our highest tier Patreon donator, and then you can just buy your way onto the cast that way. And we are joined by a very special guest, formerly of BrainstormBrewery.com, currently of Gathering Magic, and where else do you write?
Modern Nexus,
the QS spinoff Modern Site. Podcaster
hey,
on
it's
the.
Not a, don't say spinoff like it's a bad thing.
No,
it's just different.
Hey, believe me, QS is the reason I'm a thing, so you can blame them for that. And also on the Cartel Aristocrats podcast, I'm the EDH Ryan Seacrest, so I think that's a thing. Jim Casale, everybody.
I think that's a thing you made up.
I didn't make it up, man.
No, somebody else called him that.
Yeah, why would I bestow that term on myself? It was Jimmy and Josh from the Command Zone call me the EDH Ryan Seacrest. They insist they meant it as a compliment, but I don't know. Can you mean that as a compliment? So look, we're trying really hard to get this podcast started. We've been talking about non-magic stuff for about a half hour, and we're almost out of steam, so I guess we're going to call this an episode. Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure. As always.
Yeah, we had a good talk. It's too bad nobody gets to hear any of it.
It was great that Corbin didn't even speak like a single
word. He probably just disconnected like he did three times.
It's the most Corbin-like episode.
Did
he fall asleep?
He might have.
Did he pull a Ryan?
He might have. Do you guys remember when Ryan Bouchard fell asleep? Maybe we have that clip
for
you.
I remember. Might actually be asleep.
He has the docket. Corbin, what's on the docket, man? Is he waiting for an apology? Because you're not getting an apology.
He shared it
with
us,
Corbin,
like 6 minutes ago in Skype chat. So we can technically go on without him.
I didn't read it.
Guys, I don't know
Breaking Bulk's the first thing up, so...
All right, I'm back. I just wanted to let Jason go and see how he did.
I did fine. That was great.
It was less bad than I anticipated, but it wasn't good.
I have 5 years of podcasting experience. So I don't know.
You ran out of steam pretty hard there in the middle.
Well, we were
waiting
sure
for you.
We were literally waiting to see if you fell asleep.
Jason, yeah. Look, I tried to start the podcast. Jason did his intentionally interrupt me thing. It's fine. I just wanted to let him have his go at it since
he
wanted it.
We've lost approximately 85% of people by now just jerking
because
around.
Because I wasn't speaking.
No, because they think we're fighting. How you weren't speaking.
Yeah, they think we're fighting. We're not fighting. Damn it. I don't want to see another.
Mommy and Daddy love
each other
very much.
I don't want to see another tweet about how we don't like each other.
I just wanted to see how Jason did. I wanted to give him his shot at the big time there, and it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
You're the one complaining about how tired you are, and then you're the one dragging this on.
I'm not dragging
all
it on.
Those things are accurate. Again, guys,
this is top notch finance podcast, let me tell you.
Don't worry, guys, we like each other. It's fine. Jesus, stop tweeting about how we're fighting all the time.
Anyways, welcome back. Welcome back to Brainstorm Brewery. Also, after I got called a sub host, what was that? I'm not going to respond. There was no point at which it was advantageous for me to start talking.
That's every
episode. It's advantageous for you to get to bed sooner.
Anyways, so I am tired because we're recording. I just got back from the PT a few hours ago. It was a long weekend. It was a busy weekend. It was a lot of fun. Really happy. Shout out to Jerry T, friend of the cast, who came on here for, I think, a set review with us some number of months back. Got his second Pro Tour top 8 and his first win. It was really, really cool. and Christian Caucano, after years and years of being on the grind and being a very, very good player who just couldn't get, you know, the big win at the right time, but sticking with it, got his first top eight. And if you go look at the Twitch highlights, if you didn't see it live, his interview with Brian David Marshall when he won his winning in and found out he was in the top eight is, I won't say it was the best BDM interview because there was a Martin Mueller interview with BDM last weekend you might have seen, but it was a really, really cool moment.
I mean, it's really hard to beat the LGS owner that you grew up with interviewing you at the Pro Tour when you make your first top eight. So I think that's pretty special.
Yeah, it's really, really great for them. The other way, you know, from a really, you know, cool sentimental moment to a really hilarious moment was the Martin Mueller interview. You guys know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
Okay, so
I did not watch.
Oh, you're gonna like this then. Okay, so
yeah, BDM's... we're not coverage nerds like you are, dude.
Okay, you didn't follow the biggest meme of the weekend. That's fine. So BDM's interviewing Martin after a big game he just won. I'm not sure if it was when he found out he made the top eight or not, but he's okay. You know, Martin, this happened in this game, and walk us through, you know, how you got through this part here, and what was going through your mind at that time. And he goes, well, I'd fucked up before, and I didn't want to fuck up again. But if you play Magic, you're going to fuck up. And this was live TV, 3 F-bombs in about a 15-second span. And BDM, his face, his eyes just goes so wide. And he goes, so after Martin goes, you know, if you play Magic, you're going to fuck up sometimes. And Brian's like, yeah, in this interview, maybe. And he had no idea. That's the best part. He had no idea you could just drop F-bombs on a live stream. It was so good.
In the heat of the moment, I could see that happening.
He just didn't. It wasn't even a heat of the moment. Yeah,
He just didn't know.
Yeah, he didn't know. I mean, think about it, right? If you say screw up, right? If English isn't your first language, you may not know. Because people use, you know, people drop F-bombs all the time, but you just don't necessarily know that, hey, I can't do this on camera. So it's just a cultural thing, but it's hilarious. And the memes that were made afterwards of BDM's face were great. And overall, it was a pretty awesome moment.
I saw those pictures of BDM's face. I didn't know what it was. Yep.
Yeah, and I didn't bother to look into it. It all makes sense now. Because it didn't make me any money.
Yeah, watching the Pro Tour is pretty bad for making you money, right?
I don't know, man. I sold a lot of New Perspectives, guys. It lost on camera. Quick, buy it out.
Yeah, that actually reeked of people, what's the term, pumping and dumping.
Oh, well, there was real money to be made at the event. So, besides memes, like, what was good at the Pro Tour? Like,
I'll tell you what was bad, and that's Mardu Vehicles.
That I forgot to sell my Crypt Breakers at, like, $4, and now they're, like, $7, so wee!
I'll give you the top down of the standard meta game coming out of the weekend. Mardu was the most played deck going in. Etherworks Marvel was second, Zombies was third, and they were within maybe 5 to 6, 7 percentage points apart, and then everything else was way far below that. Mardu got crushed. Zombies had a good matchup against it. Etherworks had a good matchup against it. You saw there were zero copies of Mardu in the top eight. I'm not going to say the deck is dead because the deck is good, but
people were gunning for it. It was a known quantity, and everyone tested against it, and they figured it would be a large percentage of the field. They were right, and playing something that had a good matchup against it is a great way to get some free wins rounds, so it seems fine.
Yeah, the issue, the interesting part of it is, it's not like, you know, when you say people were gunning for it, that sort of implies that, you know what, I took this deck that has a good matchup against Mardu, but it's not a good deck, or a lot of times, right? But, like, Zombies is a real deck, and it's obviously a good deck. It won the Pro Tour, it had 3 copies in the top 8, Etherworks Marvel. Has game against Zombies, has game against Mardu, but 4 copies in the top 8. It's unfair enough to play against anything else as well. It's not necessarily that a couple of nothing decks rose up this weekend to beat Mardu, and Mardu will adapt and move on. It's that the new best decks in Standard beat Mardu, and that means it's pretty wide open.
Well, they were decks that were probably held down by copycat and absolutely, know, stuff like that. So post-banning, what Wizards wanted to happen with the bannings happened. People adapted, and for whatever reason, the zombie deck that was being held down before finally materialized. And honestly, I think Magic is its best when there is a viable zombie deck.
Well, it's it's really a good look for Magic.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, the ban had a big part of it. Zombies in particular had a lot more to do with Dread Wanderer getting printed and Liliana's Mastery, because those are very, very key. But that deck probably would have been played in a world of copycat, because it gets to play for Grasp of Darkness and Fatal. Well, I guess Fatal Push wouldn't necessarily have worked out very well, but it had some answer. So it would have been playable in a field of copycat, but I doubt it would have been a positive matchup. But with copycat gone, it works very well, and I think that is pretty good for Magic. And I think that the interesting part of it is the metagame is wide open from here, because Zombies is beatable. You play a bunch of Sweepers, you're going to do fine against Zombies. And Sweepers also generally are pretty good against Mardu. Just not necessarily against the Mardu sideboard plan or against Gideon. And there were only four copies of Gideon in that top eight. So, like, standard, as much as...
In a zombie deck, I would like to mention.
Do what? Yeah, exactly.
It was four copies of Gideon in a zombie deck.
Yeah, to go up against I think he boarded him in against Marvel. I know that. And the idea that the games go long. But I think standard is going to be very, very open for the next month or so, because if the narrative coming out of the PT is vehicles are dead, that changes a lot of stuff. You're going to see a lot more Chandras, I think. But Marvel is also beatable. You know, Manglehorn is a real card against Mardu. You just start jamming a deck with four Manglehorns, and that's all of a sudden that's the card they have to kill with their Harness Lightnings, because it makes the Marvel come to play tapped and it kills the Marvel. And yeah, the Marvel decks can just sideboard into a control deck or whatever, but you know, that's fine. You can beat those. So I think the point being, there's a lot of room for innovation. And you know, to that point, there were five Aristocrat decks. There was a Cryptolith Rite decks. You know, Sam Black went real deep and was playing Anointed Procession. Team Face to Face, which has been known as the best deck building team over the past year, was playing Blister Pods in their decks. And they didn't have an incredible showing, but, you know, that's a deck that is going to exist in Standard now as well. So there's a lot going on. And I watched, I don't remember who it was. It was a Face to Face member. It was Alexander Hain. Playing the Aristocrats deck against, I think it was a Marvel deck, but it was a deck playing Chandra Torture Defiance. And the Chandra player had gotten Emblem off and was just going to town casting spells. And he got him down, got Alex down to like five life or something. And then Alexander Hain, with a bunch of mana, Cryptolith Rites, and Vizier of the Menagerie, just chained like eight cards off the top of his deck over the course of like four turns, and was draining him out with Zulaport Cutthroats, and won that game by like draining for like 25 over the course of like three turns. So that's a deck to keep an eye on as well.
I've always liked Cryptolith Rites, and Sam Black's my personal hero for playing Anointed Procession, which is my favorite card in the set.
Yeah, that deck was pretty cool too. So if anyone's interested in hearing a little more, reading a little more about this, Frank Carson did a breakdown. I believe you can find it on the Saturday. It might be in the Sunday. It's in the Sunday coverage of the PT. He, being Frank Carson and being a mathematical genius that he is, he went and did a breakdown, a matrix of all the decks and their win percentages, excluding mirror matches. So you can go find that. If you go look at the top stories of the weekend article, there'll be a link to it. And it's insane. I mean, it's the best data that I think that we've ever presented as a coverage team in terms of actually not just these are the top 8 decks, these are the top 16 decks, these are the decks that got 27 or 24 points in standard or whatever. This is the deck. This version of this deck had this win percentage against the field, and that's incredible data to work with. So
didn't he just get his PhD, or did I make that up?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he has a PhD in I don't know if he just got it, but I know he. I'm pretty sure he has one.
Yeah, well, Frank is a genius. So
I'm pretty sure he's like the top like person that like if you're going for your PhD, I think like, he's one of the people you have to like go through.
What is this?
The PhD end boss?
Is it the Elite Eight in Pokemon? What are you talking about?
No. Like, I'm pretty sure he's like a doctoral advisor or something like that.
For your thesis defense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Can I just point out that Jason tried to like talk about Pokemon, but obviously has no idea that there's only four.
Yeah, he got it very, very, very wrong.
Oh, the Elite Eight. Oh, that's the Elite basketball.
Four.
I don't.
No, they're Elite Four. You said eight.
Whatever, dude. Elite You're Four is today. Elite Eight's basketball. I don't care, man. I haven't played Pokemon since.
I thought you were intentionally missing. I thought you were intentionally missing it. So
no, he's just an idiot.
I.
An I old mean, one.
He says that lovingly.
An old one at that.
I'm just old, man. Who cares? Like, you guys are talking about your non-151 Pokemon on your Pokemon Go, and I can't talk to you kids anymore with your rascally Charizard or whatever crap you got. I don't know.
I actually got the newest Pokemon, Sun and Moon, and I have a team of entirely Gen 1. Like, they clearly recognized it after Pokemon Go came out. They had an opportunity to get old players back, so they just put a bunch of Gen 1 Pokemon into the game.
Nice.
I mean, there are always Gen 1 Pokemon in every game. That's just how the games work.
That's not true.
Gen 5 is entirely... Oh my god, why are we talking about this?
Original.
This is my fault, and
up until the Elite Four, nerd. After the Elite Four, you get all the other ones.
Sure, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, a original decks, like, you...
I've played the game for 6 hours, and I have a team of Gen 1 Pokemon. So it's a little different than after the Elite Four.
I don't even
have a badge.
Well, part of the other thing is like they revamped a bunch of them in this.
Yeah, they all
iteration
look
of Pokemon because they changed the types and made them the Alolan variants.
Yeah, and you have to like pet them to make them evolve.
What is this Tamagotchi?
It's actually really stupid.
I don't know which one you're trying to pet to evolve.
They evolve with friendship.
That's always been a thing. Friendship evolutions have been a thing since like Gen 2, which was like 2000.
It was not a thing in Gen 2.
Yes,
why
it was.
Are we talking
Umbreon
about this?
Umbreon and Espeon evolved via friendship.
Because you don't know what we're talking about, Jason.
You're just
that makes
wrong.
It all that much better.
I'm not wrong. Friendship was a
is
thing
this a
in
Fogo
Gen 2.
Bet? This sounds like a Fogo bet.
This is something you can Google right now and admit that you're wrong.
I know, but I want to do a Fogo bet. It makes it more interesting for the people that don't care about Pokemon like Jason.
I know.
Who mistakenly brought it up.
Corbin, I'm Googling this right now.
I think that you're really wrong.
You're allowed to think whatever you want. It's a free country.
I think you should have to fight the Elite Eight because the Elite Four are too easy.
Okay.
Well, there's eight gyms beforehand.
You should have to play Gonzaga, Syracuse.
Okay, Corbin. Friendship, also referred to as loyalty in Gen 2 Core Series... is a measurement of how much a Pokemon is attached to its trainer and enjoys being in their care. It affects the evolution of certain Pokemon, the power of return and frustration, and the availability of a few in-game items and ribbons.
Yeah, I think Doug is correct, because you need to have max friendship for
Gen 2.
Umbreon and Espeon.
Gen 2. In Generation 2, friendship was expanded to cover all Pokemon. All Pokemon have a base friendship of 70, but Pokemon caught in a friend ball start with 200 friendship, and Pokemon hatched from an egg start with 120.
A friend ball?
No, that I didn't.
Friendship is affected by leveling up, using a vitamin, battling against a gym leader, grooming, walking steps, using TMs, using a battle item, and then decreased by fainting or the energy bitter herbs.
I think Corbin gave up because he was wrong.
No, the thing I was reading says it's based on the time of day.
Yeah, it's both. You have to have high friendship, and if it's high friendship during the day, it's Espeon. If you have high friendship during night, it's Umbreon.
And that makes it evolve?
Yes. It has to have a friendship level of above a certain number. That number is not given to you in-game, but you can check that number at one of the the stalls.
You're such a nerd.
If you give it a nice handy, it's usually that's all you need.
You're such a nerd.
I'm rubbing
it. Okay, I didn't think it was a thing because it's not a stat. You know, no one talks about the friendship level. You
it
just,
is a
like,
stat.
Did
it's
a thing.
Invisible stat.
Yeah, sure. Right, okay. It was a stat we didn't know about.
Sometimes it's called... Sometimes
it's a stat that's still measurable when you talk to one of the ladies at the salon.
Oh my god.
She'll
tell
you, like,
yourself?
If your Pokemon
You should
Pokemon
listen to yourself.
You.
Please listen to yourself.
You just don't want to admit that you're wrong.
Can we please talk about Magic the Gathering?
I guess I'm wrong about
Doug is
Pokemon.
So excited that he's right this one time.
Dude, Pokemon's Doug's thing. I should have known better.
Yeah.
It's true.
You should have made an obvious faux pas like me and then just said, I don't care.
Okay,
but
so...
But no, you had to dig your heels in and pretend to care about Pokemon.
Well, that was worth it, man.
He did care. He cared for real. That was real caring, I heard.
Wow, then maybe he'll raise his Pokemon's friendship level without having to use a friend ball or a vitamin on it. I really care about you, Espeon.
Vesperion. That's a new
Espeon,
one.
Espeon, not Vesperion.
Get it right, man.
Said Espeon.
Listen, man, I just heard... Oh, my God, this... Sorry.
You're trying to derail us.
Now Jason's sucking Jim into it.
No, I'm playing Mario Kart, and I just got hit by a blue shell.
Why are you playing Mario Kart right now?
Because this podcast
because
is terrible.
Because we're not talking about Magic.
What Mario Kart are you playing?
It only requires like half of my brain to talk about Pokemon.
What Mario Kart are you playing?
And to make fun of Jason. 8 Deluxe.
Uh-oh. I don't know about Deluxe.
I guess we're done with PT coverage, because Corbin like doesn't want to talk about anything else.
I want to talk about Breaking Ball.
Okay, so hold up. I pulled up this spreadsheet to tell people this. I do have a handy reference here, just to give people some info, and that you can go read the full breakdown of it, like I said. But by overall win percentage, Chandra Flamecaller versions of Teemer Aetherworks were the top deck at the PT in terms of overall win percentage. They won 2/3 of their games. The spell heavy Teemer Aetherworks, which was the Torrential Gear Hulk version, won 60%. Mono Black Zombies won 56%. Black Green Energy won 55%. Stock Mardu Midrange won 50% of its games. Stock Teemer Aetherworks run just a few, like 49.6%. White Black Zombies was at 49%. Everything else was below that. There's a lot of Aetherworks that did well, but Blue Red Control did not do well, and White Blue Flash did not do well. So there you go. The big winners. Coming out of that are Aetherworks decks, even though, you know, Zombies won it and that white-black version made it. If you go down a little further, Obzon Tokens, just Sam Black went 6-4 with his deck. Teemer Energy decks with Elder Deep Fiend won 58%. White-black Control, one player went 7-3 with that. Everything else is below that. So there were a lot of interesting things coming out of it, but even though Zombies won, you're going to see a lot of Zombie sex for sure, but Aetherworks is public enemy number one in terms of win percentage coming out of the event.
Okay.
So there you go, everything you wanted to know about the PT.
I like Manglehorn sort of long-term for EDH and stuff like that anyway, so being able to impact Standard, I don't know if that's financially relevant, and I certainly don't want to imply that foils are relevant in Standard, but that's a card that could go up a little bit. I mean, we've seen $7 uncommons in Standard, so I don't think it's unreasonable to think that Manglehorn could be a buck or two.
Yeah, I mean, even like Harness Lightning has been $1.50 or $2 serving as the conduit for a while. So, you know, and I don't think Manglehorn ever goes above a dollar, but I do think that it's worth, ever? You know, setting aside certainly not any time in the next couple years.
Yeah, I'm with Corbin on this one. This doesn't seem to outright replace Reclamation Sage or like Caustic Caterpillar in a whole bunch of lists.
The fact that it doesn't kill enchantments is like the biggest killer for me.
Yeah, it's just not a thing.
I don't like the fact that it's like I don't care about artifacts enough to just play another Viridian Shaman. I'm always already not playing Viridian Shaman.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think it could be, you know, 50, 75 cents, good breaking bulk sort of thing in modern, in standard over the next few months. So, but anyways, I think it's going to be the metagame is going to be a lot in flux over the next few weeks as people have two clear decks to aim at right now in Zombies and Aetherworks. So financially, you know, I think we probably all agree that Zombies are peaked, right, this week?
Oh, yeah, I sold mine.
I gave up on mine like 2 months ago and put them all in the 50-cent box, and then I guess I sold them for 50 cents.
Hooray!
That's exactly what I do with my Dark Salvations.
You save 500% for the next guy.
Yeah, the,
you know what, whatever. Though? There's a benefit. I wasn't sure they were gonna be there's a good. Benefit to people getting them that cheap in the store. It gives them a good feeling. But yeah, so I think if you have, I think zombies are going to be a deck. I don't think they're going away anytime soon in terms of standard. But I also think that you were probably at the peak here. You want to keep an eye out for what's next. The Aetherworks decks, I don't know how much did Aetherworks Marvel move?
Went to 10.
They're like $10 now.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably about right. I don't think that there's anything too great there. It's all about next week finding what comes next. And that's where things are going to go from here. What's good against those decks? So, yeah.
I mean, the next couple of events are Modern, aren't they?
Next week is Standard. I'll be in Montreal. This is Monday night. By the time people listen to this on Friday, I will be in Montreal for the Grand Prix, which is Standard. So I'm not sure after that, but the Standard will be right back at it this weekend. And we'll see where things go.
True. The Star City Open is Modern. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah. All right. We'll give you your moment here, GJ. Time to break some bulk.
Finally.
Breaking bulk time. Breaking bulk time. Break.
Oh, yeah. Breaking bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking bulk. The end.
For anyone who doesn't know, if Jim brought on any listeners who don't listen to the cast, I'll explain briefly. Breaking bulk is where we all choose a card that people just pass over in bulk all the time. Sometimes it's a card that you think is bulk rare that isn't. Most of the times it's a common or an uncommon that is worth money that you're not aware of. So that's our goal with these. It's just to point it out. It's not necessarily, sometimes it functions that way, but it's not really a pick of the week where, hey, this card's going to go up. It's just, hey, don't forget about these while you're looking through stuff.
And we usually play a little guessing game too to try to make each other feel bad about our inability to guess cards.
Sure. All right, who wants to go first?
I have a black Modern Masters sorcery.
Modern Masters original?
One. Original. Modern Masters 2013. It's a black Modern Masters sorcery.
Death Cloud.
There you go.
Oh, you've never done a rare before.
Ooh, that was easy.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was racking my brain. Possibly be worth anything?
I did Magister Sphinx, like, 3 weeks ago.
I thought these were all commons and uncommons.
Oh, yeah, you did. You did Magister Sphinx.
Okay. I've done rares a few times. Whatever. Yeah, Death Cloud has quietly doubled over the past 12 months or so. It used to be $1. It's crept up to 2, and it's at its peak ever since the reprint. So this is just something that I've sort of threw in the dollar box for a while, and I was just picking through, and it's a pet card of mine in Modern. I like Death Cloud list, and I enjoy seeing that card do well, just because I like land destruction, and I'm that person. But it's quietly doubled, and I don't really know why it's doubled, but
Popper.
Man, that was almost funny.
Thought it was pretty funny.
You could try again.
No, it was worth it.
I mean, do you have an actual reason as to why this card has doubled over the past 12 months?
I do not.
Okay, yeah.
He was just calling you a pauper. Because you can't afford to get married and you have to elope in Vegas.
God. It's not that we can't afford to, it's that we're choosing to not spend like 5 digits worth of money on a one-day event that is...
Why not? That's what I'm going
to
do.
You're supposed to spend 5 digits of somebody's parents' money.
No, that's for sure not happening.
Nah, he just says nah.
Nah.
Neither of our parents are wealthy enough to do that. Actually, her family might be, but mine definitely isn't.
Okay. Luckily, it's Bride's parents who are supposed to pay. Yes, DJ.
Yeah, you bought the ring, dude.
Your parents, in traditional settings, the groom's parents buy the rehearsal dinner, and the bride's parents go broke paying for the wedding.
Okay, I wish I had known that before.
Did she not either? Come on.
I don't know. We didn't discuss. No,
she
that.
Knew. She just wasn't gonna tell him. Her dad's like, "Look, you tell this stupid idiot that his family has to pay for everything
that,
you got
that you're marrying. The stupid idiot that you're marrying."
All right. Anyways, who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I'm going to chain mine together with last week and tell you guys a story. So I was putting stuff in my case, and he's got boxes of bulk in the store. I turned around, and what did I see staring me in the face? A funeral charm. I was like, ooh, those are in the 5-cent, 10-cent, whatever, bulk box. I wonder how many funeral charms are in here. So I dug through, and I found 34 funeral charms for a nickel each. And I thought, hot damn. And I was like, what else in Visions is worth picking out? So I found another Visions common that I paid a quarter for. This is a green creature, and it costs 1 mana, just like Funeral Charm.
I got nothing.
Visions.
Oh, is it the it's like a tiger or a lion or
it
some shit?
It is an elf.
Taunting elf.
Visions.
No, Taunting Elf is Onslaught.
No, that's...
I just made up an elf
it's
name.
It's also in Urza's. I think it's been printed twice.
I got nothing for you.
Quirion Ranger.
What?
Oh, Quirion Ranger. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
You were just talking about that.
If I knew what set it was in, I would probably have told you that one.
Yeah. So, definitely $2.50 on that. I got those for a nickel. I see those in bulk sometimes. Man, I was picking pretty deep, because when he said a nickel, I was like, all right. I was like, do I pick out Sisse's rings that I could buy list for 11 cents? I was like, no, let's not do that. But I got enough $1 cards that I paid a nickel for, so it pays to dig through bulk sometimes, even if it's at a store that's just got, like, the less foot traffic there is for Magic, especially on the older stuff, the more they just have stuff that's just been there forever. Like, all their prices are wrong. They're like, I want $7 for Arc Slogger, and I only want, like, a quarter for Soul Foundry, and it's great. So, Quirion Ranger, definitely pick out a bulk. You're like, hey, this is probably a pick because it's an elf. Well, it's definitely a pick.
So does your store owner not care when you, like, pick out all these cards that you're
making
money off?
Yeah, I was curious about that, too.
He's very concerned about prices. He's like, did you look these prices up? I don't want to charge you too much by accident. So he's very concerned.
That's a nice guy.
Yeah, well, he's just like, whatever, the stuff's in my store. Eventually we'll make a deal and I'll just buy all that bulk and he just won't have to deal with it anymore. So he's glad to make a sale. He's like, it's in there for a nickel. If I cared, I would go through and price everything, and I don't, so have at it. He was happy to get the nickel, so everybody wins. And there are a lot of stores like that. There are probably... almost as many stores like that as there are, like, people that are like, we look up everything on Star City. So, travel, I guess, right? That's what we always say. Man, the places Ryan and I found shop crawling on the various shop crawls we went on, some of these places were just fantastic.
All right, well, I'll just give you guys mine. It's not really guessable, but it is worth mentioning. And it's Modern Masters 2017 cards. Because it's recent and you're definitely going to see some of these around. Might have a lot of it yourself. But the tokens and the emblem from Domri in that set are actually worth money. And they're worth some of the, you know, once you get past Path to Exile, Serum Visions, Might of Volcrosa, Terminate Inquisition, the next most expensive thing is the Elemental Token from Voice of Resurgence. Now, you should be using the Brainstorm Brewery Elemental Token because it's awesome. But you can get rid of the ones from Modern Masters 2017 bulk to do it. But also the soldier token's allegedly worth $1. The emblem's worth $1. The worm tokens are 50 cents. And, you know, there's... I'm not sure whether the buy list prices on them there are there now, or even if you'll find anybody who wants them or anything like that. But it is worth setting aside and keeping them because, you know, this is how in a few years you have... I don't know about worm coil tokens, that level, right? But... it is how you get like a $2 or $3 token, then you get $1 or $4 in a buy list if you just happen to have them sitting around. So
the original worm coil tokens are worth around like $3 or $4 each from Scars of Mirrodin.
Yep.
I actually just sold some Japanese ones for $5 each on Twitter.
Ooh.
Ooh, you fancy.
Yeah, and I don't think any of these are going to get there. I mean, most of these are reprints anyways, but it is possible, especially on websites that have like automated buy lists in terms of that stuff, you know? Like, anyone who's actually making a buy list probably isn't like, man, I really need a Domri emblem. But there are a lot of places that will just which is when their stock hits a certain point, their buy list will go to a certain number. So just worth pulling them out.
Okay, well, I don't know exactly all the cards that have been covered on this cast as far as this is concerned, but a lot of times when I buy bulk, it's like booster boxes of like commons and uncommons, or like draft piles of commons and uncommons. So I tend to look at everything by set. And no core set, no M set excites me more than M13.
Yep.
And I think that there's a lot of M13 uncommons that people just like forget are in that set that are pretty expensive. And even though there's a couple of like obvious ones like Rancor, there's also Reliquary Tower, Jace's Phantasm, which is like not a standard or modern or like any competitive playable card.
That's not true.
Is it Pauper? Is that
no,
what you're
it went nine like and a... it went 9-0 at day one of a GP.
Yeah, there was like a mono blue illusions deck where you like Thought Scour.
No,
and
it was Mill.
Oh, that one. There's also I thought you were talking about
like
a
that's
deck.
Like okay. That's not the reason why this card is like $1.50 or whatever.
No, it's casual.
Yeah, and then there's also Vampire Nuthawk and Fogbank. So if you have some M13 bulk commons and uncommons, you should take a look through them. There's probably a lot of stuff
man,
in there
you
that
just,
you don't realize.
You just gave him like 40 picks. We don't do a whole set.
It's like five cards. I said five cards.
Fogbank's a really good one. Like, well, Fogbank's a really good one because Fogbank is actually in multiple sets. And they're all worth money. It's pretty great.
I mean, so is Vampire Nighthawk, Reliquary Tower, and Rancor.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, Fogbank is not the obvious one there, you know? Like, a lot of people listening...
I just want to block an EDH.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. Well, there you go, guys. I think we got some emails, right, DJ? You want to hit us with a couple?
Yeah, we have some Patreon emails who have sent in their questions and concerns over the past week and a half or so. And we'll do the Patreon.
Have they sent in any condolences to Jason's Chicago Blackhawks?
Yeah. There was one last week. There was Jason should get into hashtag broom finance after that sweep.
Oh, wow. I didn't know Jeremy was sending you emails.
Yeah, Jeremy can't even write.
But, okay, this one's from Eugene Sesma III. What is the likelihood that WotC would make a throwback set with the older card frame again? Not just limited to reprinting already old border cards, but making some newer cards with the old border like they would some judge foils. I'm attempting to make an old border-only EDH deck, so that would be super spicy to see the newer, more powerful cards with the old border. Keep up the great work. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, I don't want to say the chance is zero, but it's rapidly approaching zero.
I think the only exceptions would be if they possibly did some more throwbacks with those judge foils. But, yeah, they're not going to dedicate an entire set to the throwback for people who played the game 15 years ago because, like, most of those people probably don't play the game anymore. Some of them they still do. But I think a large majority of their audience from that time period has since gone on to other hobbies or other aspects of life. And so there's a reason they stuck with the new card frame for this long. And it's because it sells them packs.
And we've noticed that the prices on some of the new card frame is higher than the original printing on stuff.
Like, you guys want to know why? There's that little hologram foil that makes people feel a little bit safer about those rares.
Well, even on commons and uncommons, like Crows and Verge and, like...
Yeah, people just want all their cards to look the same, and, you know, just for reasons, right? Most of your cards are going to be newer in a lot of ways, in a lot of formats, and they just... So they want the new frame. I'm not sure if it holds true with foils, but for non-foils, that's definitely the trend.
No, absolutely. Like, a lot of the Commander reprints will hold value.
Right. All right, hit us with the next one.
All right, this one is from Nick Hayes, another Patreon. Thanks for your support, Nick. Hello, Brew Crew and Perpetual Guest DJ. Can you explain why MTG Finance people are always telling us to buy foil rather than non-foil EDH specs? Maybe I don't get out enough, but foiling an EDH deck isn't a thing I've ever come across. Everyone I've met would rather put the extra money towards more decks. Thanks for the time in the cast, Nick.
Well, I think the number one reason, that, and we talk about it a lot on here, is that
they're safer from reprinting.
Exactly. I was going to say, talk about the reprint risk of them. It's, they're just not going to be reprinted in a rando commander set that tanks the value of it, or a random modern master set.
Yeah, and I do think that your anecdotal experience of nobody ever foiling out EDH decks is, I don't think that's the norm. As somebody who stands behind the counter of a display case and sells Magic cards, there's a lot of people at our EDH night who want to foil their decks. Yes, there are some people who are on a budget and they're like, well, I can build four decks for the price of one foil deck, so I'd rather build four decks. But there's definitely a sizable chunk of people who have the income and capital to just foil out one deck or foil out two decks and then also build those other four decks. So,
and it doesn't have to be a ton of people doing that either, because foils are scarcer.
Yeah. Right.
Stop making me feel self-conscious about my foiling habits, okay?
So
I foil everything. I foil it all as well. Not like on purpose all the time, but just in general, if I pick up a foil, I will throw it in my deck because I sell them less often, even though, yeah, they do sell. But I sell them less often, so I put the foil in my deck and put the non-foil in the case so that I can sell it later.
So yeah, they're safer from reprints for sure. It's just they don't reprint foils and ancillary products like Archenemy and Plane Chase and Commander, so that's where a lot of these Commander reprints are targeted, like Phyrexian Arena and Reliquary Tower and all that. Well, Phyrexian Arena ended up getting Conspiracy, but overall they're just generally safer.
Yeah, so that's why we say that. It's 100% about getting blown out by random reprints.
However, if you're like me and you just want to be able to move your cards quicker, like be able to sell them when you need to, I definitely recommend just getting non-foil copies. Yeah, there's some non-zero chance that you get blown out, but when you do end up going to sell them, you don't have to like try to figure out if you can find a guy that wants to buy your rando foil version of something that's probably several times more expensive. Like, it's not impossible to find that person, but it's definitely harder. Like, it's the difference between trying to sell a bunch of regular Gaia's Cradles versus a Judge Foil of Gaia's Cradle, which is significantly more expensive, and the market for that is significantly less.
Right. All right, we have more, DJ?
Yeah, we've got several. I believe those were the only ones from Patreons that we're going to read this week, but we've got...
So like, the only ones we care about.
Hey, we got some...
Yeah, give us another one.
This is from Robert Compton, who sent it in about a week and a half ago. Hey, y'all, I've been listening for a couple months now, and I finally have my first real financial decision to make. I was at Target today with my girlfriend, and she was stuck in that shitty dollar section, as is her habit. Since setting myself on fire would be less authentic hell than that section, I wandered over to the trading cards. After pushing the restock cards out of the way, I was able to see that amid the pile of Stalwart Unity Commander decks were those repack collections for sale. They are a pretty horrible scam designed to trick distant grandmothers into wasting their bingo money. I must be the luckiest grandma in the world, because facing out for me were three of the five original Commander decks for $30. The problem is I don't know what to do with them. They have a few cards that I want, but I can usually have just as much fun with bulk EDH cards than anything else. They are sealed in the cellophane, but there is no other bit of original packaging. Hopefully DJ will be able to log in to read this. Thanks, Robert Compton. You should buy them and then start a TCG player seller account, because it only takes like an hour. You just have to give them like some banking information, cell phone number, and then an email address, and then you can, I mean, I don't know which decks you found, but I mean, like, there's Kalia, there's like Animar, Flusterstorm, like every single one of those decks has like at least one card that's like $20 or $30 in it by itself. So you can just throw those high dollar cards on TCG player. It's pretty easy to do. You'll get your money back in like 2 weeks, then you have a whole pile of trade bait or other valuable cards. So You could also just probably buy list them and make your money back if you'd prefer to do that. But you basically just stumbled across free money.
Yeah, get it.
Yeah.
Also, as a side note, what was this guy's name? Robert, I believe? Yeah. Robert, your girlfriend sounds a lot like my fiance, and I understand your plight.
What, the shitty dollar section in Target?
Yeah, that's her favorite. It's her favorite place.
They have a dollar section in American Targets? I thought that was only a Canadian thing.
I mean, it's not like literally a dollar, but it's like, it feels like it. Everything should be a dollar or less.
Sure. All right, there you go. You want to hit another one, DJ?
Well, I have another couple of things to add on to that. I don't know if you also follow Saffron Olive on Twitter, but he recently made a thing on about these commander repacks where weighing certain ones can help you determine which repacks those are.
Ooh, that's nice and scummy.
Do you think so?
I think it's super scummy too. I was thinking that too, and I was like, man, that's like the worst way to do that.
Why is that scummy?
Because like,
how do you feel about store owners? Yeah. How do you feel about store owners weighing stuff? No one likes it. It's just a scummy thing to do.
I mean, like they're repacks though. Okay. Like I totally
sure.
I feel differently if it's like a sealed booster pack and you're trying to like weigh for foils. I think that's a lot different.
I don't think it's any different. I think it's pretty much the same thing. It's just easier to do this than just to weigh for foils.
Yeah, it's the same concept.
Yep. It's pretty garbage. What did you say the name of the guy that said to do that scummy thing was?
Jason. Come on, man.
What was his name?
Man, he's all about making friends today.
What was his Twitter handle?
Jesus.
I think he was called the EDH Ryan Seacrest. I think that's it.
Sound like there's any way that could be construed as a compliment.
Yeah, it's. I think Jason E. Salt is the Twitter handle.
I would never advocate taking money out of the pockets of a hardworking store owner.
Well, no, but these were at like Walmart.
They're only at big box stores.
I'm just giving you guys a hard time.
Like it's. I think there's a difference between doing that at, like, your local game store and between doing it at, like, Target or Walmart.
Well, because they're faceless entities. You can scum them all you want, right?
Why would you weigh them when you can just steal them? Like, I don't understand why we're picking around. Just put them all in a bag with tinfoil on the inside and weigh them when you get home.
They're too big, man. Too big.
Make a bunch of trips.
Make a bunch of
the
trips,
store detective comes over, you're like, I saw some chick over there like putting stuff in her purse in the dollar section.
Listen, man, I've been working out, my abs are just rock hard now, like plastic hard.
Alright, let's get to one more email because we have a decent overstock from the past. This is from nmarty13 at rochester.edu. Brew Crew and whichever guest happens to be on the show this week, when you read viewer emails, are the people who wrote them acquiring a guest status, like some of the most distinguished MTG players you've had on the show, or I guess DJ? As the goal of reaching $700 a month grows closer to making DJ a permanent cast member, will there be an emergency banning of donations to prevent this from happening?
$700's really cheap. I'm kind of considering it. An emergency ban. I could see doing something real scummy.
It'd be based on data, that's for sure.
Yeah, we have 48 hours of data that tell us that DJ should never be a permanent cast member.
I do like that the audience is also running with the joke.
It's not a joke, man.
It's got a solid lifetime.
Is there a way we could gerrymander this somehow?
Yeah, you have a Patreon vote. Should Doug become a permanent cast member?
We've gotten some mixed feedback overall. There's some people that are sick of it, and there's some people that enjoy it, which I think is fine.
Some people said they're sick of it?
Yeah. I literally read an email like a week or two ago about somebody saying, like, stop digging around and just make him a permanent cast member.
That doesn't sound like he's sick of it.
And then you guys said that it was me reading it, not reading an email, and it was just me saying it. But it was actually an email.
Sure thing, man.
Allegedly, it was actually
a so-called email.
That person's like listening to this, like making gripping his steering wheel super hard. Like
he's already like talking getting about his Arthur names. Cosplay ready.
Yeah. we do pick of the week.
Yep, let's pick of the week and we get out of here.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. The pick of the week.
Is anyone gonna sing the song? Is it Jason like intoxicated and singing the song?
That was initially, I think.
You know what really should be? You should add that to your Patreon as a goal. Jason sings the song every week and sings the song after taking a shot.
But I don't want him to
after.
Do that. That's the problem with this plan.
Yeah, but I do.
Yeah.
Then give us money.
Yeah. It's easy to get what you want, man. Just give us money.
You can even determine what I drink, and that'll be like what style I sing in.
What does PBR get you? What style is that?
Rockabilly?
Nice.
All right.
I'm
gonna get behind that.
I'm gonna start off pick of the week here.
All right, fine. You can do it.
I'm gonna go with Cryptolithrites. We talked about it earlier, and I think it's really good. I think once that deck gets out there and refined a little more, people are really going to want to play with it. The other option, from that deck is something like Vizier of the Menagerie. You know, that's a mythic, but it's getting opened. Cryptolithrites is not. So that's the place I want to look.
All right. I've got a conspiracy.
Boy, we are really just, you can tell we want to get out of here. We're just blowing through this.
We've
like,
been
great,
on,
whatever. Corbin said a thing. It's a card. People.
We've been on
it.
Skype for like 100 minutes.
Yeah, and we've been talking to Jim for 100 minutes, and it's pretty bad.
It's too much.
I mean, it was great, but we needed to start this like 100 minutes ago.
Yeah.
No, we're on a normal time schedule for the podcast.
I have a conspiracy too rare. It's a 5-mana enchantment aura. And enchant creature, at the beginning of your upkeep, you put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of enchanted creature. What do you guys think it is?
No, why are you picking this card?
Why? Is it like a pick of yours?
Well, I was looking at it today because I've been on an anointed procession kick a lot lately.
I think
lately,
it's a really good card. And
I thought about picking it.
I mean, like, it's hit an all-time low from its reprint, and Conspiracy 2 is not being opened anymore, and it's just one of those reverse J-shaped graphs, except like it's gonna go back up to $2 and everyone's gonna wonder why it did that. So yeah, Followed Footsteps is the card we're talking about, in case you have never heard of the card. It's a good casual card. It was in original Ravnica, and it was always
$2.
You know what, Corbin, you say all sons.
I know, that's why I'm saying it. Just messing with you.
Corbin says Contagion Engine, so...
Hawkbound Ravager.
No, I don't.
I've said Contagion Engine multiple times.
Hey, we've all had some faux pas, man. We've all said some things we didn't mean about how many Pokemon Masters you gotta defeat.
Some of us have made some mistakes about Pokemon Friendship and not acknowledging which generation...
You know what? I'm okay with that one, DJ. You got that one, buddy.
I'll take it.
You're
I'll
still not a permanent cast member.
I'll put that argument.
You're the biggest Pokemon nerd we got, man. You got it.
I'll put that victory right next to my Pauper victory trophy.
Oh, shit.
Jesus.
Yeah,
okay,
Corbin,
man.
He only gets you once a week.
Yeah, it's a really, really some key stuff here. You should feel good about yourself.
You know, Corbin, part of being a sore loser is invalidating the stuff you were wrong about. Like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's okay. Me. Fake. Fake news. Sad. I'm just going to start screaming wrong at DJ every time.
Come on now. Come on.
Wrong.
Above that.
Sean Spicer's not a grass type. He's an among the grass type.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, that might actually be my favorite like meme of the year, honestly.
All right, guys.
I really want to put them in my bushes, but my bushes are not big enough to see them over.
Every time I look at my bushes, I remember that Bush was actually somehow a better president.
I was waiting for that one.
Oh, boy.
Miss All me right. yet? I do miss you now.
Might. Let's get a new pick of the week here.
I would like to pick a card that is on the upswing. It's down from its all-time high of about $3. I think it'll be $5 if it doesn't get reprinted. I'm on a big Anointed Procession kick lately. I think it's the best card in the set, or at least my favorite, because it's a card that was already good, and now it's in a color that didn't have access to it before. I like pairing Assemble the Legion with Anointed Procession. Assemble the Legion's like 2, 250. It's a really ridiculous card. If you're doubling those tokens, it's even more dumber. If you have a doubling season, it's even more dumber because you double the muster counter and the number of soldiers created. But Assemble the Legion just, man, you just, Boros is kind of boring sometimes, and this is just a card that gets there. I think Anointed Procession is so good that it actually made Queen Marchesa decks the sixth most popular deck this week on EDH Rec. It doesn't even crack the top 25 for the month. So, oh no, there it is. So it's in the top 15 for the month, but still. This went to, from like, you know, from relative obscurity. It's not in the top 25 decks of all time. So this is just something that people said, oh man, Anointed Procession gives you two of those stupid assassin tokens. And then you're looking at the other stuff in the Queen Marchesa deck that's making tokens. You got Assemble the Legion, and you got all kind of crap like that. So I think that Assemble the Legion is a card that's probably about to pop. I think people are taking a second look at it with Anointed Procession, because if you couldn't pair it with Parallel Lives before, now you can pair it with Procession. And it's looking like a U-shaped graph. It's going to hit its historical high again, and I think it'll continue going. You might get blown out by a reprint, but if you're buying it at $2, then you just wait a little longer, because it'll go back above $2 again, even if this is reprinted. So yeah, that's my pick.
That's a good one. I remember when we called this when it was actually at the bottom, and it's just done nothing but grow since. And I think it's still got, you're right, it's got room to go, and it may be, you know, moving from that slow and steady value gain to just the big pop.
And that it, all, what could it be is just like some decks like Marchesa that are people are building again because of new cards like Anointed Procession or Harsh Mentor going in that deck. Because I don't know. I'm seeing a lot of decks that were just sort of like somewhat popular, just kind of popping off again. Another card we're seeing is Alesha Who Smiles at Death, surging in popularity a little bit. And I think Dusk to Dawn and Harsh Mentor are the cards that are really pushing that up. For whatever reason, having a really, really good Wrath like Dusk has pushed Alesha decks back up. And I guess everyone's playing Canyon Slough? I don't know. But Harsh Mentor is in a lot of decks that were sort of middling popularity and just like are popping back up. So look at stuff like that. If people are taking a second look at a deck, that could be somebody that took a deck apart, putting it back together. Could be somebody that said, I'll pass on Marchesa for now. And now they're having to pay a little bit more for the stuff. Marchesa herself is now $5. When, you know, Conspiracy 2 first came out, that was like $1. So, I don't know, man. I just like looking at graphs and seeing the shape of those graphs and then making my determinations on that. So, there you go.
All right, Jim, what do you got for us?
So, I have, like, kind of a combo pick of the week. There are two cards in Commander 2016 that I think people really haven't had the time to appreciate them for what they do. They look like they're slightly worse versions of cards that already exist, and like, why play that one when you can play the other one,
Undaunted?
Right? Well, you could just, they don't have Undaunted. They have Converge. Ooh. And Domain, which are basically the same thing, but whatever.
Is it Collective Voyage?
No.
Okay.
No, it is Crystalline Crawler.
Ooh.
And Prismatic Geoscope.
Yeah, Geoscope is
yeah.
It's like the build your own Gilded Lotus. I like Geoscope a lot.
Exactly. It comes into play tapped, so like it turns a lot of people off, but it can be 4 or 5 mana, not just 3. And why would you not play this when you could just play 2 Gilded Lotuses instead of 1? Like, if you're already in, you know, in the market for a Gilded Lotus, you should be in the market for a second Gilded Lotus. And things in Commander 2016 like are drying up pretty rapidly, especially the newer cards. So the fact that these two cards are both like about $2 is pretty telling to me that there's nowhere they can go but up from here.
Crystalline Crawler Yeah, it does a real good impression of Mindless Automaton, only it's actually a pretty good card. I like it.
Yeah, it's like a Pentad Prism, except it's also a dude.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in that set I think people are going to eventually come around on. I think Duelist Heritage, is that the one that gives the one creature double strike when it attacks? I think people bought that out. I think there's some other cards yep. people have targeted, so...
Conquerors, Flail.
Yeah, Flail was... oh, man. That was fun. That was a card I called an article, and then I got to read a Reddit post about what a bad spec it was. I love doing this.
Not that Jason's salty.
Pretty much every like, commander partner guy is worth money now.
Well, like, some of the best ones really aren't just... I kind of expected Kaidel and Thrasos to kind of grow together, but it seems like everybody would rather pair Thrasos with Timna the Weaver. And Timna the Weaver is half as much money as Thrasos. So that's one that's about... there's still some money to be made there. Because, you know, Timna's like, what, $3 and Ravos is $6 and Thrasos is $6? So, I think Timna's got some room to grow for sure.
I do not believe that is the case. No, Timna is already $6.50.
Oh.
Yep, it happened while you weren't looking.
Oh, no. That's too bad. Oh well, yeah, there was money weeks ago.
Guys are pretty busted.
I think Kaidel is really good, but nobody seems interested in generating infinite colorless mana. Just me.
I mean, you could do that, but there's a lot of ways to get infinite mana, and then just use Thrasos to draw your whole deck.
Well, that's what I paired Kaidel and Thrasos together.
Yeah, that's boring.
I have come to that conclusion. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I really don't like the deck. I think I'm just going to turn it into Rashmi.
Oh, play Prime Speaker Zagana.
Oh, dude, that's boring.
But it's good.
If you're drawing a ton of cards, it's linear because you really only need a couple win conditions if you're reliably drawing enough of your cards that card selection doesn't matter. I like to play more of a toolbox build than sort of like, well, I'm going to get everything, so why not just play Prime Speaker Zagana and just win with Laboratory Maniac? So,
I always do.
I know.
Really? I never draw my whole deck. I just kill people before then.
I mean, it's not like I only have one Simic deck. I've got three already.
That seems like too many. Hey. Like, I'm a Simic fan, but I'm just like, you can't have two decks with the same colors, like the exact same colors. It's just like, I think that's boring. I think you just do more
very
with your money. You say that, but there's only so many things that Simic decks can do.
You could be Vorrel the Hellclade. That has like zero overlap with other Simic decks.
It's very true. That is one of the very few decks.
Azuri's pretty unique, too.
Azuri is very unique. That one is true.
So there you go, Jim. I may not know about Pokemon, but I know about Simic, goddammit.
Got him, coach.
You did it.
I named some things that are different.
Yeah. You know what else is not like that? Hapatra.
All right. So there you have it, guys.
Sorry. My fiance is playing Mario Kart.
You just got Jason ulted by somebody else.
I'm sorry. It wasn't intentional.
All right. There you have it, guys. That's the cast this week. Thanks to Jim for coming on. Jim, one more time, where can people find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at @PHROST_. You can find me on my podcast, Cartel Aristocrats, every week. You could find me on Modern Nexus every week. And you can find me on Gathering Magic every other week. But just look on Twitter. I retweet all the shit, all the places you can find me.
There you go.
Boom.
All right. That's Brainstorm Brewery, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week. I have a question for you before we start.
For me?
Mm-hmm. When you gonna have a baby?
I can't stop saying that.